Good morning. May it please the court. Walter Maxim, representing Appellants Michael and Jolene Stannard and 10 Charlie Productions in this matter that comes before the court on the issue with respect to the sufficiency of the pleadings, the complaint. I have attempted to distill it all to a few distinctions that I hope the court will address in its consideration.
Maybe I could start you out, and maybe that would be helpful, because can you point to specific provisions in the complaint setting forth allegations, not conclusions, allegations that one or more of the defendants prevented the plaintiffs from hiring a private security firm or otherwise required the plaintiffs to hire them?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there are even documents attached to the complaint that show payments. There are allegations of cash payments that were made to off-duty officers under threat of closing down his concerts. There are attached to the complaint checks that he eventually paid when he complained to the officers and said, my accountant requires some record of this. I cannot pay you under the table as you're demanding.
I'm not getting the answer that I need here. Didn't the district court alert you to the need to focus your allegations and weed out the extraneous portions in the complaint in order to make it more intelligible? And given that you didn't make any effort to comply with that demand, why do you think we should find an abuse of discretion here? We're talking about the complaint, not what's attached to the complaint.
Well, with all respect, whatever's attached to the complaint is embodied and it becomes a part of the complaint by reference.
Well, it doesn't become a part of the plain and simple issues that a complaint should tell us.
Well, the complaint is lengthy because of the number of events, a number of contacts, a number of officers that basically forced him to give up his private security officers and use these off-duty officers who were dressed in uniforms, wearing guns, who were not at the time on duty, but the sheriff said, we're going to close you down if you don't use them. That's very clear in the complaint. As a matter of fact, the district court first held, and it's quoted at page 9 of my brief, that a more definite statement of facts is unnecessary because this is the district court. Plaintiff's allegations are not so vague or ambiguous that defendants cannot reasonably respond. He cites the Smith-McDormand case. The district court said these motions are disfavored, and then he goes on to say, quote, plaintiff's complaint is sufficient to put the defendants on notice of plaintiff's claims and the grounds upon which they're based.
The judge changed his mind. Well, and so what we have before us now on review are his decisions dismissing the complaint with prejudice and the denial of leave to file yet another amended complaint because the others failed to cure the multiple problems.
I would say this, that in terms of the length of the complaint, it covers a long period of time, several years of dealings.
The problem is not just the length of the complaint. The problem is its unintelligibility and incoherence.
Your Honor, I believe that in the complaint, it is very, very specifically stated that these officers...
There's nothing specific about this complaint whatsoever.
It says they took money, and they took it under color of law. They took it from him. They made him pay cash, and they were going to close him down. They did this on all these various events, which
there is not a single allegation that is that straightforward in this entire complaint.
I believe that there is, and I believe it is set forth. I know that the court had a question in terms of the length of the rendition, but even in the district court's summation, in its denial of the county's motion to dismiss, and it's quoted at page 10 of my complaint, he goes on to say that began local concerts event, Nygren demanded standard hire, this is the court, hire and began using deputies as security. However, Standard objected to the several acts by the security guards, including bringing drug-sniffing dogs onto his residence. When he eventually objected, authority demanded the deputies of security. Nygren threatened to close down the front of the property for future events. In 2005-2006, Nygren coerced Standard into signing unilateral, non-negotiable contracts to hire his off-duty at double the prevailing wage he was paying for his private security guards. Plaintiff further alleged that Nygren used intimidation and coercion throughout this time of the complaint in order to force plaintiffs to comply with his demands, and Nygren had the ultimate decision-making authority on behalf of the McHenry County Sheriff's Office, and that's at document 49. I'm quoting the court, the district court. Required short appendix pages 2 and 3. The other quotation I indicated was document 25, respondent separate appendix page 1. So the district court and the magistrate had operated for almost, going on almost into the discovery phase, as to being clear about this, denying not one but two motions in terms of specificity.
He's and then, called Garst, Mr. Maxson. Of the following. Where a complaint contains allegations that could state a claim, the district court may dismiss it if the complaint is so unintelligible as to require the court and the parties to wade through paragraphs of irrelevancies in order to find the few allegations that matter. And by filing this 52-page complaint, I'm afraid that that is what happened here, according to the district court. Now, you're into your rebuttal. You can use it if
no,
you
No, I will save my rebuttal.
Have Mr. Leist? I'm having trouble with names today, I'm afraid.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Don Leist, and I represent the defendants in this case, and my co-counsel is Sarah Jansen. Your Honor, the history of this case demonstrates that Judge Capalla did not abuse his discretion in this case. He, like any other district judge, has to be given the authority to handle his docket. Judge Capalla has to deal with not just the litigants before him in each particular case, but also the other litigants that come before him in other cases. And once his schedule is ignored, that necessarily prejudices the other litigants that have no fault of their own who come before him. This court has said in Ball and in Williams that it will not substitute its judgment for the judgment of the trial court unless there's no reason for what the trial court did. In this case, Your Honors, I submit that Judge Capalla had numerous reasons to do what he did, and that using the Ball factors, that 5 express clear warnings are enough and 3 strikes are enough. Plaintiffs have not shown in their briefs or at oral argument this morning that Judge Capalla's dismissal was fundamentally wrong or lacking in reason. That is the burden that plaintiffs have, pursuant to cases like Williams and Moffitt. Plaintiffs cannot so demonstrate because the facts just won't let him. In this case, there are a number of court orders that the plaintiffs fail to comply with in complete disregard for the court's time and rulings. Your Honors, as was pointed out by this court in Williams, before Ball, this court did not require trial courts to give express warnings. But in Ball, they said, we want this court to give express warnings.
I was the district judge in Ball. I know all about Ball.
And, Your Honor, in Ball, the Seventh Circuit said that some of the factors that you should consider are the frequency and magnitude of the plaintiff's failure to comply with the orders and deadlines of the court. the effect on the court's time and schedule, and the prejudice to the defendants. And lastly, the merits of the plaintiff's suit. In this case, Your Honors, we have orders found in the record at 22, 33, 34, 55, 61, and 65 that were all violated by the plaintiffs. These violations, the cumulative effect of all these violations, ultimately led to the correct dismissal of this case. Judge Coppola did all and more than was required of him by cases such as Ball and Williams and the case of Oral Lamps. There are many similarities in those cases in a case at Bar. In Williams, there were misfiling deadlines due to computer glitches. That's what we have here. In Oral Lamps, the plaintiff failed to amend his complaint as ordered by the district court. That happened twice here. And as required in Ball, there was not just one warning shot. In fact, there were five warning shots that were given to the plaintiffs, and all were unheeded. In fact, three of those warnings were express warnings for dismissal.
I never kept my word.
I'm sorry?
I said I never kept my word.
Your Honor, there was also another warning at document 47. There was two warnings at documents 55 and 65. One Rule 11 and one 41B warning. Furthermore, the record shows at document 45 that Judge Coppola took the extraordinary step in the Western Division, that is, to actually set a special status before him, because in the Western Division of the Northern District, the judges utilize Magistrate Mahoney to handle all status matters. But in this case, Judge Coppola, since the plaintiff's brief was over 3 months late, specially set a hearing to inquire as to plaintiff is if he was going to pursue his matter, and if so, how much time he needed. At that time, Judge Coppola granted an oral motion another week for the plaintiff plaintiffs to respond to the individual defendant's motion to dismiss. Your Honors, I suggest that should this case be remanded back down to the district court, the complaint will not look any different, because he is before you today saying, I want the Seventh Circuit to order Judge Coppola to accept my First Amendment complaint. He's not saying, give me one more chance and I'll plead correctly. I won't put in facts common to all counts section. I won't group all the defendants together as if they were traveling together in a giant microbus at all times. What he says is that I want Judge Coppola to accept this complaint with all of his obvious deficiencies and completely disregard his ruling again. It's also important to note, Your Honor, that counsel did not even attempt to alter the trial court's decision by filing a post-trial motion or a post-judgment motion or with attaching a Fourth Amendment complaint that was done correctly. And so he shouldn't be allowed to appear before this court and essentially ask this court to be his new trial court, because as this court has held in the Ball cases and Oral Lamps, that if there's any reason, legitimate reason, that Judge Coppola found as he did and the dismissal was warranted, then it was appropriate for him to do so. Do you have any questions relative to my brief or anything that I've said this morning? Thank you, Your Honor.
Jackson, 2.5 minutes. We'll give you 3.
Thank you.
Lady Bountiful.
Generosity is appreciated. The defendants filed 2 motions to extend time with no basis. I filed a motion to extend time because I was undergoing out-of-state cancer treatment, and I did have some difficulty in keeping the time limits. But my motion was granted. I filed it timely. The court made a comment that it was done at the last day, but it was still timely. And granted, and I'll say this maybe for the bar here, including myself, but it's true. Sometimes lawyers can be wordy in terms of trying to be encompassing and accumulate, have all of the information brought to the court. It was my understanding that the court wanted more specificity. I gave more, including those exhibits. In terms of presenting it, this is not, I believe, a case where the baby should be thrown out with the bathwater. This is a case where we have a drastic sanction for no wrong. There was a general statement about Rule 11, if you're going to add facts, be cautious, yes. But there's no motion for sanctions in this case. The ultimate sanction was the drastic sanction of dismissal. And I'm respectfully to the court, I believe that given the fact that not one but two motions, the court itself said and specified in two short paragraphs that I read, this stated a cause of action. We're here not because of really, we're here because of to have a de novo review of a complaint and whether or not it holds water in terms of a cause of action. I believe it does. I respect that we can all have differences. I've just had another case where a judge had a different view and wanted even more than perhaps this kind of a layout, and there was no problem with laying out common facts rather than keep on using a computer for real.
Mr. Maxim?
Yes, it was down before Judge Gottschalk recently. But I'm saying, and that was a very involved case, but rather than keep printing those out, referencing each one by reference in a separate count, those paragraphs are reincorporated. Basically, there's a case here, and the judge did make a clear error because he said that there was no enterprise. I have cases where even a court or a sheriff has held to be a RICO enterprise. He said that that was insufficient. There are a number of cases in my brief on that. And with respect to the facts, the ultimate fact is taking property without due process, using the badge, off-duty officers forcing under threat to basically take away the right of a businessman to use his own security people and charging double the price. Now, I believe that that should be heard on the merits. If there is some way to trim this down, I'd be totally willing to do that. I was at the time, as I say, and my affidavit showed I was very ill. I did try to comply with what the court said, but I had to keep in the facts as I saw that I thought were germane. And there, as you can see, there's a very long history of dealing with these parties. And with respect to each officer is alleged to have taken money under the table, cash, demanding cash from a private citizen, and then eventually taking checks. Some of them took checks. They all did security services that forced security services that were unwanted and took money for it, none of which went to the county, using county guns, uniforms, and squad cars to accomplish this on their time. Now, I believe in fundamental, we have to keep our eye on the ball. I know the spotlight has been pointed at me, but I think in terms of the complaint, it does state a cause of action, especially with respect to 1983 and RICO. I respectfully request that you find that it does and remand it. If there's some other criticism or something else I need to do, I'd be happy to do it, but in terms of distilling it. But I think in terms of any wordiness or any length, that should not be the test in terms of a drastic sanction to terminate a client's case because of the way in which it may be presented rather than the fact that the facts are stated and twice the district court said this complaint stated a cause of action. Actually, before it was amended and had more specificity. So thank you very much.
Because it's not fair to the appellants to give you that much extra time. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.